I'm Manila Chan. You're tuned into Modus Operandi. While Westerners have been concerned about a chocolate shortage or prices surging for their favorite sweet treat, little thought is given to where that chocolate is coming from or what's causing the disruption in the supply chain. Two words, workers' rights. On this episode, we'll explore complaints of the exploitation of African farmers by multinational Western corporations and how recent anti-Western sentiment in politics may turn this so-called chocolate war into a hot one. All right, let's get into the MO. It's no secret that Africa is a continent rich in natural resources, from precious gems like diamonds to cobalt that powers the lithium for your cell phones and EVs, to the cocoa used to create your favorite dessert. It's all found in Africa. But in recent years, Africa's more northern parts, known as the Sahel region, and much of West Africa have come under scrutiny by Western powers, namely the U.S. and France. Between political instability, such as coup d'etats, to the plight of cocoa farmers looking to earn more from multinational corporations such as Nestle or Cargill, the eyes of the West are looking toward Africa. Joining us to discuss is Netfa Freeman. He is an organizer with the Pan-African Community Action and coordinating committee member for the Black Alliance for Peace. He's also a host at Voices with Vision at WPFW here in the DC Metro. That's part of the Pacifica network of stations. So Netfa, first, in recent weeks, news across the U.S., you know, was highlighting the chocolate shortage. Bloomberg reported that raw cocoa was surging towards $10,000 a ton. That's an unprecedented number for this commodity. However, the source of this shortage was actually man-made. African cocoa bean farmers were actually demanding higher prices for their product from, you know, companies such as Nestle or Hershey, Cargill, General Mills, and so forth. So Netfa, chocolate is a $130 billion industry annually, yet the farmers in places like Cote d'Ivoire or Ghana earn about a dollar a day. The farmers were asking for pennies more, but the corporations decided they wouldn't pay it, saying the farmers were acting like a cartel, trying to be like OPEC, so they just stopped buying the beans. Now the farmers are in a rut, and the end consumers, like you and me, are paying the price. Your thoughts on this?
Well, this is a result of the neoliberalism of the international global economy. The relationship between the cocoa farmers and the corporations like Nestle and Hershey and Cargill and General Mills and these are a direct legacy of European colonization of Africa. And that what we're seeing is the contention between, you know, the farmers and regular people and their intent to chart a path of self-determination, to assert their interests. And so under neocolonialism, Africa still doesn't control the exports, the finished goods, or even the cash crops, the cocoa. And where the money is when it comes out of the country and is manufactured and refined into finished goods like the chocolate bars and things that we have. And in particularly in Ivory Coast and Ghana, there's four major cocoa producing countries, and that's Cameroon, Nigeria, Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast, a lot to say, and then Ghana. Ghana and Ivory Coast and the farmers there, like you said, that make only like $1 a day or something like that. And we're not even talking about the disparities in big plantation of cocoa farms versus the small family farms. The big plantations are what's financed and encouraged by the structural adjustment programs and or the lendings of IMF and World Bank. But the cocoa farmers, regardless of whether it's plantations or small farms, are now beginning to realize their interest. And what's happened, this is what's driving the price up, is that in particularly Ivory Coast and Ghana, they came together to put a fixed price that's also higher for them to be able to sell the price of their coca, and also included what's known, what they're calling a living income differential. And that living income differential, which is part of the higher price, is to go directly to the farmers. Now, neoliberalism doesn't broach anything about, it's not for the interest of regular people. Regular people's values only as good as what their profit, how much profit they can yield to corporations and international finance capital. And so it doesn't really think about those things. Now, Hershey and Nestle and all these other corporations, and this is what we saw initially when the coca farmers organized and initiated this price fix in these countries, they had to go on a public relations acknowledging the fairness of this and that they would comply with this higher price, but then reneged. It was just really just to do something in the public, but then also started reverting back to only paying the lower price. And that as a result of this, the farmers also started withholding, trying to sort of a battle, a contention, withholding their coca. But at the same time, the companies and the international market, which the farmers don't control, can withstand that. And also, just like they do, corporations, they just raise the prices in order to deal with a shortage of what is coca. And so that's what we're seeing here. We're seeing the farmers realizing their interest in trying to fight back.
Yeah, so Hershey, Mars, and Mondelez are three of the top five chocolate manufacturers in the world, all American companies. Any surprise to you that the reason for this shortage, the plight of the farmers, is not being discussed by mainstream media outlets here stateside?
Mm-mm. No, it's not any surprise at all. One of the inconveniences of the moment is that we're living in the time, we're actually experiencing the time of the year that chocolate is, being advertised from a lot of the companies. And news like this would not gain sympathy for these big companies like Hershey and Nestle and all of that. Western countries really, especially, they can't really afford to cover Africa regularly, and especially not in any honest way, and without the racial undertones, the racial spin, the racist spin that it has, that Africa's backwards and whatnot. News like what's happening here regarding Africa has the potential of awakening a more like Pan-African consciousness among the African or the Black communities, and a Pan-African and working class Pan-Africanist consciousness among these communities within the Western countries. And so Africa has to be depicted. The only way for people to not have sympathized and have a more Pan-Africanist or internationalist regard or purview is that Africa has to be depicted as backward and fraught with terrorism and violence, and which needs the West to assist them. There's not people-centered movements for workers like the farmers in Africa and whatnot. And then the people to know with the farming in the chocolate industry, there's child labor exploitation. These big plantations exploit child labor and whatnot. These things have to remain in the blind spots of the Western populations. Otherwise, it will gain sympathy that the corporations cannot afford.
So now here's the twist, I would say, in this unsavory story. Several of these cocoa bean producing states are ECOWAS member states. The Ivory Coast and Ghana alone represent 70% of the world's production. Now we're learning that U.S. AFRICOM intends to build brand new drone bases in those states and Benin as well. Your group, the Black Alliance for Peace, issued a statement condemning this move. So first, explain for us why you think the drone bases are a bad idea. And I don't know, is it a coincidence, the situation with the cocoa bean farmers in Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana?
Mm-hmm. So the drone bases are a bad idea. It's not just the drone bases that are a bad idea. It is the whole AFRICOM, what's known as AFRICOM, is the U.S. Africa Command, which is, proliferated all across the continent. It is the United States military occupation of the African continent under the so-called auspices of trying to fight terrorism and assist Africa and everything else. But Michael Langley, the commander of AFRICOM, just a couple weeks ago, put it plainly when he was asked about why U.S. military is in Africa and what people should know about that or the reasons for it. And one of the most telling aspect of what he said, along with all the other fluff, is that they were there
quote, for influence and access. This is why AFRICOM is there. And we know that the presence of AFRICOM has done nothing but exponentially increase the terrorism and terrorist activities there. There's a lot of atrocities based on the drones, the drone bases, particularly in Somalia and Libya. And so when they're talking about new drone bases in Benin, Ghana, and Ivory Coast, they're really just talking about extending the type of atrocities that not just drone bases, but all of AFRICOM is responsible for on the continent of Africa. So it's not a good idea. I don't think it's a coincidence that these three countries are considered for in relationship to the coca and the coca production in particular, but it's not just the coca production. It's just really about all kinds of industry and access in Africa, whether it be timber or oil or the uranium. But what the West fears is a potential of consciousness of self-determination in Africa. A radical, even if led by workers' movement, is a dangerous to their interest. And we can see self-determination and those types of things expressing themselves, particularly in the former French colonies, where these countries have kicked out France. And we also know that that Niger, that's part of the what they're referring to now is the Alliance of Sahel States, the last country to take over from really the comprador class, has now calling for the removal of AFRICOM from its territory. The short answer, and I don't want to belabor that, but directly to your point, is that any expansion of AFRICOM, whether it be drone bases or anything, is dangerous for Africa, has meant nothing but destruction and death. And they have a modus for doing so, which is about control and access.
And coming up next, usually an economic bloc doesn't threaten military action, but that's exactly what ECOWAS did following a string of coups in West Africa. We'll discuss it when we return with Netfa Freeman. Sit tight, the MO will be right back.
I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously, why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
Wars are a result of lies. If wars can be started by lies, peace can be started by truth.
The importance of WikiLeaks can never be overstated. That transparency is an extraordinary journalistic achievement.
They just succeeded in finding documents that existed and making them available to the world public. I mean, what could be more honorable than that?
By publishing information and sharing information with the public, he was exercising the right to free speech. He did so in the public interest.
I've watched the tsunami of lies and smear engulf him endlessly, vindictively, perfidiously, and I know why they smear him.
Isn't it ironic that no one who instigated that illegal and immoral war has been brought to justice? But the great truth teller sits behind bars, waiting 175 years of virtual death sentence. Are we going to let that stand?
In a modern, pragmatic world of smartphones and tech upgrades, artisanal crafts and hand-painted traditions of yesteryear seem to be fading away. But take a step outside of the bustling megapolis of Moscow, and you'll find that traditional Russian folk arts culture is still going strong.
Welcome back to the MO. I'm Manila Chan. Netfa Freeman was kind enough to hang out a little bit more. Thanks for sticking around, Netfa. So ECOWAS, you know, is an acronym for Economic Community of West African States. Why haven't they spoken up against these multinational corporations? Isn't the point of the group economic? I mean, it's in the name. Shouldn't agriculture be more important to the group than foreign militarism interests?
Mm-hmm. So I'm glad you asked this question, and it's a very important question. ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, has its origins in the 70s and did have, and it came right after we saw this, the sweeping of independence and decolonization movements in Africa, independent countries gaining their independence from former colonialism in Africa from Europe. But then the configuration of ECOWAS is that it's comprised of leaders of the various, representatives of various governments in West Africa, of the countries, the 14 or 15 countries that comprise Africa. And being the neocolonialism, which is the control of the politics and the economics of the countries, but with all the outward trappings of independence, it means that it has fostered what we refer to as a comprador class, people who feign to be working in the interests of their population, but really are beholden to interests outside, foreign interests. That's what a comprador is. And with these being the leaders that are heading most of these countries, or heading all of these countries, even though that it had good intentions in the beginning, now ECOWAS pretty much serves the interests of the Western countries. This is why they have threatened the military intervention into Niger because of what happened there, the taking over, despite the popularity of the takeover and the expelling of the French. They threatened military intervention. And the only reason they didn't is because their populations were the populations of the various countries heading ECOWAS were not for that intervention and were already demonstrating against them. We had demonstrations or celebrations of those countries that are expelling France, and in demonstrations against the leadership and these compradors and the countries that are comprising ECOWAS and were threatening for military intervention.
So there's a lot of political instability in West Africa right now. I mean, coups in Mali, Burkina Faso, Guinea, Niger was the last bastion of American military influence out there in the Sahel. But now, under the junta government, they just abruptly canceled this 12-year-old security pact with AFRICOM. The spokesman for the junta, Colonel Major Amadou Abdurrahman, said this, quote, "The government of Niger, taking into account the aspirations and interests of its people, revokes with immediate effect the agreement concerning the status of U.S. military personnel and civilian Defense Department employees." In plain language, he basically said Niger was expelling the United States. How do you see this impacting the growing threat of, say, terrorism from the likes of Al-Qaeda?
This is a pretty complicated question, and so I think it's first should be understood that AFRICOM was not, despite what they were saying, was not having any success, nor the French Foreign Legion or whatever that also has French and the U.S. have biggest military footprints, with the U.S. having the largest military footprint on the continent of Africa, ostensibly for the purpose of fighting terrorism. And they were not having any, if anything, terrorism once terrorism grew, has expanded, increased since their presence. So it would be a mistake to think that without them, that the terrorism would necessarily grow because they were gone. Now, also, I think it's important for us to consider what stabilization and how we think of it, the stabilization, and stabilization for who. So this has been instability for the Western economic order, domination of Western countries and their ability to have access to mineral resources and to super exploit Africans. But Africa, like we talked about, the farmers and whatnot who have had been under colonialism for hundreds of years or centuries, there was no stability for them. This doesn't represent instability for them, what's happening. And in fact, we should be careful to understand that any any course of decolonization for Africa, of being able to depose the domination of Western countries that should include the United States now as the top new colonizer on the African continent, required the going through a phase of expelling the militaries and also expelling influence of sanctions and the international financial institutions like the IMF and World Bank. It would have to go through that in order to gain any sense of real people-centered stability. In other words, governments and states that are operating in the best interest of the masses of the people, or the masses being able to assume control. And so in this sense, what's happening is a precursor, a necessary first step for there to be real independent, self-determined, and even hopefully a united Africa. And so Black Alliance for Peace stands for against all forms of military intervention and all forms of intervention. And so I think this is that we want, I think it'd be it's a good first step that Niger has taken, and that we call for all of the countries in Africa to take the same step take the same step and look for a self-determined united Africa that's working in the best interests of the masses.
Yes, stability for who is a great way to look at it. As you mentioned earlier, Niger is uranium rich. France is one of the largest purchasers of uranium from Niger. But the military junta announced previously that they were going to halt all sales to the French. There were concerns that Emmanuel Macron might take military action into Niger, you know, under the guise of overturning this coup, which apparently seemed to be a very popular movement. That hasn't happened, though, on the part of France. We saw a lot of Russian flags being waved there. But when you combine this with the eviction of the U.S. military, how do you see things playing out in Niger?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I don't think it would be, to put it lightly, a good look for there to be a military intervention on the part of a direct military intervention on the part of the West to intervene in Niger, especially since these movements seem to be quite popular. And we've also seen Mali, particularly Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso form what they're calling an alliance of Sahel states, a security alliance that first and foremost is security, saying that an attack on one is an attack on all of them. And all of them have had taken an anti-France, anti-Western disposition, wanting to have their own currency and whatnot. And now, now it's looking like it's also spilling over to the U.S., which U.S. was trying to avoid that and be neutral in this. But everyone knows that it's all connected. What's also going to be interesting is, and we didn't get a chance and we won't be able to talk about it, is the developments in Senegal, where there is a newly elected president, and he's the youngest president, you know, and a prime minister. These two young people represent a growing young movement that's also talking about anti-France and the self-determination of Senegal, and then also in Guinea-Bissau, where the revolutionary party of the PAIGC, the party of Amilcar Cabral, been able to form a coalition and taken power, been able, voted in power. So these are popular governments that they can't accuse of being taken over by through military interventions, but all of them, the ones that in the military alliance and the ones in these, have the same, basically same essential agenda. And I think the only thing that can result if the West persists with its aggressiveness and its insistence that it dominate is that they're going to bring all of these forces together, and we're going to see emerging a new movement of decolonization or neocolonization in West Africa, which is long overdue.
Netfa Freeman, member of PACA and Black Alliance for Peace, also co-host at Voices with Vision on Pacifica. Thank you so much for your perspective today.
Thank you for having me.
And that is going to do it for today's episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy and current affairs. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you again next time to figure out the MO.